Good afternoon, everyone. As something that's been mentioned throughout the last couple of days is, as we explore these new technologies in the animal breeding and reproductive worlds, how can we apply them most effectively, and how can we apply them in an economically feasible manner? So one question that has, I guess, emerged for me from personal successes and failures and some involvement within some large embryo transfer projects is, how well do we really account for the economics in embryo transfer programs, especially when it comes to accounting for potential biological variation that is inherent to any activity that involves livestock or biology for that matter. So eventually that turned into my master's project, which was an economic risk analysis of embryo transfer programs through stochastic simulation. So before we dig too deep into the actual model, I'll give just a little bit of background about kind of what
Clicker or what's the okay.
All right, so put a little bit of background behind this before we dig into the model.
For some reason it's not falling on here. Well, I just can't see where I'm at on this screen.
So some basics in investment analysis that's used across the business world, taking into account break-even points, life of the investment, some of the more common decision-making tools that we use when it comes to investment would be net present value, annuity equivalent net present value, so putting that net present value on an annualized basis so you can compare projects with different investment lives, return on investment, and there are several other options and advanced methods that economists and those in the financial field use pretty regularly. And then when it comes to risk analysis, a lot of times that can be accounted for based on range of potential returns and what's the probability associated with each one of those returns. So one segment of the beef industry that really does this pretty well and uses it extensively is the cattle feeding industry. So before they buy a pen of cattle, most feed yards are going to calculate a break-even price based on cost of gain, interest rate if those cattle are financed, what's the buy price, what's the sell price, what does that need to be to reach some type of return goal on those set of cattle. And from there, they're going to determine a risk management strategy, whether that's leaving them unprotected to the open market, hedging, forward contracting with the packer. And then there's also marketing decisions. Will they be marketed on the grid, carcass weight, or sold live? And what allows these feed yards to do that are the huge amounts of data that they can collect over the years and use to predict performance based on days on feed, average daily gain, feed gain, the list goes on. When it comes to the seed stock and calf industries, how well do we really do this? I'm sure there's some large operations with a lot of experience in ET that probably do it fairly well, but I doubt there's very many. And I'll bet most of those assumptions are made based on past performance averages and not really accounting for potential variation in outcome. And a lot of us, I think, just base it on intuition and optimism, hoping for the best. But for something that requires such a huge investment of time and labor and money, I think we could all probably do a better job. And one aspect that I think probably has outweighed a lot of the economic considerations are the fact that we get so focused, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but we're so focused on genetic gain, maybe we don't consider some of the short-term cash flow incentives that we need to do to stay in business. And along, I think some of those reasons that we don't maybe do such as good a job of this is because there's a lot of challenges within the cow-calf and seed stock industries that maybe you don't see in the cattle feeding industry to quite the same extent, such as dynamic environments from Florida to Montana to Texas. And in comparison, most cow-calf seed stock operations are pretty small in size compared to a large feed yard operation or even our neighbors in the swine and dairy industries. And one point that has been made several times over the last few days is the difficulty in record keeping when it comes to reproductive traits and just the additional labor and time that it takes to get accurate numbers. And then again, an important aspect is accounting for that variability in outcome. You can have the same female or the same animal under the exact same conditions give you different results, whether that's from a gain, considering weight, or conception rates. It can vary immensely. Plus, over the last 5 to 10 years, there have been multiple methods of embryo transfer that have become commercially available. So just to recap on some of the big ones, multiple ovulation, embryo transfer, or MOET, one of the more traditional approaches to embryo transfer, going to involve some type of superovulation protocol followed by AI and then in utero or in vivo development of the embryo followed by flushing on day 7. I'll use the term in vivo derived a little bit in this presentation, and MOET is just a type of in vivo. In vivo just means those embryos are developed within the actual cow and not in vitro, which is our other option. So IVF, or internationally it tends to be called IVP, which is maybe the more accurate term because IVF is actually the actual act of fertilization that's going to occur on day 0 there. And there's different methods of this. You can either do ovary stimulation and superovulation, or take the non-stimulated approach and just pick a day, bring the cows, and then OPU or ovum pickup, collect those oocytes without any pre-synchronization or stimulation. So ultimately, the question that comes to mind is what type of ET, if any, makes economical sense for a given scenario. So the objective of this project was to develop a prediction model that can generate comparable economic outcomes and values to analyze the risk associated with bovine ET projects. I wanted it to be user-defined so that scenarios can be played with and tweaked to look how different changes might impact the operation. And a major focus was accounting for that biological variation in production output. And to make it useful, those financial terms have to be comparable. And down the road, I think there's some potential to really dig into some sensitivity analysis and maybe even some optimization techniques. So why model in the first place? To put it simply, modeling is typically a much cheaper and a much faster way to test an idea or an experiment than actually applying it in the real world. Plus, it gives you a good understanding of how the system works before you actually do apply it in the real world, if that's what you choose to do. So briefly looking at the system of MOET, you're going to have a population of donors there on the top and a population of recipients. Then those donors will produce some number of embryos. Some number of those potential recipients will then be considered viable for transfer, so they'll respond to synchronization. You'll transfer those embryos. You either will or won't establish pregnancy. If you don't establish pregnancy, those recipients can either be put back into the recip pool or exposed to a natural service sire. And then you still have potential for embryonic loss even after they pass over the first heat cycle. And one marketing potential avenue would be to market those recipients at some determined pregnancy day, whether that's 60 days or 90 days. And then as well, you're going to sell those ovens. Also, there's potential to sell embryos as well. So what if you take that pregnancy beyond 60 days and maintain that ownership? There's still opportunity for fetal loss. And at every one of these points is a can be considered a potential point of variation. So you don't know exactly what that fetal loss will be. You don't know exactly how many embryos are going to be produced. But that's going to each one of those points is going to impact the whole system down the chain. So at some point, you'll calve those cows, wean calves. You'll have ET calves to market. They can be marketed at weaning, or probably more likely, if it's a full-scope seed stock operation, develop them, sell them some type of production sale setting. So then looking at the IVP production system, really, the only major difference is going to be an extra step in collecting COCs or cumulus oocyte complexes, and then in vitro maturing those oocytes to get the number of embryos that you have to work with. Other than that, it's going to be a pretty similar system. So right now, this model can readily analyze 10 different scenarios for different ET protocols, including MOET, using sexed or unsexed semen, and even the option to biopsy those embryos before transfer or not biopsy. Then looking at different methods of in vitro production, NS standing for no stimulation, so that can be done at a random interval or done at set intervals, and that's actually going to change your reproductive physiological aspects because it's going to start to synchronize some of your follicular waves. And then there's also the option to undergo a superovulation protocol before collecting IVP embryos or oocytes, and then, of course, if we can consider sex-sorted options as well. So how do we account for that variation in potential biological outcomes, or biological uncertainty, if you will? One way to do that is through stochastic simulation. So rather than having, say, picking an average and saying, I expect to have 10 embryos per donor, you can select a range, a distribution, or define a distribution that has a range of values, saying there's a 10% chance that I'm not going to get any embryos, there's a 50% chance I'm going to get 11, and there's a 5% chance I'll get 20 transferable embryos. So you can input that as a variable rather than the one set value. One way of stochastic simulation is called Monte Carlo, and a variation of that is Latin hypercube simulation. So as I described, the real key element to this is establishing those estimates for population distributions. And the software that I use to make this possible is called AtRisk. It's an Excel add-on. So some basics on random number generation. Monte Carlo simulation sampling just selects a random value from a distribution. The downside to Monte Carlo is there is potential that you could cluster. So there's a potential that you could, one turn, all the values could come from one side of the distribution in one area, whereas Hypercube segments that distribution in equal areas based on the number of replications the simulation is going to run, so that way it does a better job of sampling a wide array of all outcomes. As I mentioned, the key is getting those estimates for population distributions. And how I did that was extensive literature review, some industry data, and whereas my main focus was on looking at Bosphorus beef cattle, I omitted data from lactating dairy cows and Bos indicus females. So how did I estimate the population distributions with values that are greater than one? So this is like the number of embryos per flush would be a good example, or the number of oocytes per OPU. Applying this Akaki information criterion, using at-risk, it creates a score for each distribution, and then you can select the distribution based on the best-fitting score. And from there, you can apply some logic, such as you can't get less than zero when it comes to the number of embryos, and adjust it a little bit to make them realistic. So when estimating probability distributions for means that are going to be basically mean percentages from between 0 and 1, the central limit theorem of statistics tells us that if we look at the sample means, they're going to be normally distributed, so I didn't have to pick a distribution, that's what it's going to be. Then using those sample means, I found the standard error, which in this case is, or found the standard error of the mean, and applied that in the place of the standard distribution. So basically creating a normal distribution of the mean with potential for change in what that true mean could be. But when it comes to actually applying that to the real world, the number of times that you apply that mean is going to have a great influence on the outcome. So the best example of this is flipping a coin. We know the true probability of getting heads is 50%. You flip that coin three times, there's probably a pretty good chance that you will get, you could get three heads. You flip that coin 1,000 times, and it's going to come close to a 50-50 split. So I built in binomial distributions to account for that. So one example would be pregnancy rate. If you're only transferring 10 embryos, it's not out of the question that you might get 8 or 9, even 10 pregnancies. You transfer 100 embryos, and it's going to approach closer to that true population mean. So that's what that binomial distribution accounts for. So now we'll look at some of the stochastic variables that I included in the model. So on the left is the description of the variable, on the left is the description of the variable, distribution type, followed by some of the parameters describing that distribution, and then the actual distribution shape is on the right. So I accounted for everything from the number of donors, that percentage of donors that don't respond to superovulation, which is plays a key role, the number of embryos collected per superovulation, number of oocytes per OPU based on each one of those different protocols. And then continuing on with blastocyst rate and IVP production, what percentage of those oocytes are actually going to develop into embryos, and that's going to differ based on what type of semen, whether it's sorted, sex-sorted or unsorted, and there's even an influence of protocol and superovulation on blastocyst rates. Blastocyst being the seven-day embryo that's going to get transferred. Going on, more percentages of blastocyst rate, and then looking at pregnancy rate based on, was it an IDP embryo, was it a Moet or IBD embryo? Was it transferred fresh? Was it transferred, or was it transferred frozen? Accounting for differences in that. So each one of those distributions is actually the variable that gets put into the equation rather than just one value. Continuing on with some pregnancy distributions based on protocol, and then pregnancy loss distributions based on protocol. Also did fetal loss. So for I define pregnancy loss as or embryonic loss between days 21 and 60, and then post 60, I call it fetal loss. And then even once the calf's alive, there's still opportunity for calf death, so accounted for weaning percentage based on number of calves born. And finally, built in a distribution for revenue, because not every animal is going to be worth the same value, and this distribution is going to change based on operation, marketing techniques. And the neat thing about all these is they're actually really easy to change. So the tough part is was building a model structure. These variable distributions are really easy. So this is looking at the total population. If you've got 4 or 5 donors that you're going to flush, and you've already flushed them a half dozen times and have a pretty good idea of what they're going to do, you can tighten that window and probably take a more reasonable approach. And, you know, there's not considered so heavily the probability of failure. Whereas if you've got 4 or 5 donors that you've never flushed before, you know, it might be wise to include the population averages, which is going to account for some of those failure probabilities. And, you know, if you're just an operation that you're pretty confident you can sell this set of calves for a higher dollar value, you can change that distribution as well. Some of the assumptions built into the model: no correlation between traits, everything enters the system is open, all calves are weaned on the same day, and there's no post-weaning mortality. Reproductively, all the animals are healthy, normal 21-day cycles. I wanted to account for seasonality, actual calving seasons, and not year-round flushing or embryo production. So limited MOET to just 3 flushes per breeding season. These account for, within the system, I mean, all this stuff's automatically determined once you press go. So if a recipient returns to estrus on day 21, if you're still in an embryo transfer program for that season, she can re-enter the recipient population. If not, she'll be exposed to a natural sire. And if she happens to experience pregnancy loss, she can be naturally serviced again, as long as it's within that window of gestation. Again, so if an ET bred recipient loses a pregnancy after day 60, she is not eligible for natural service, and any natural service bred female that experiences pregnancy loss will be considered open at the end of the program. Assume all bred recipients are sold at least 60 days after a pregnancy with no calf at side. And one assumption is that the calf development, so production sale, is going to occur within the same fiscal year. Well, that's not necessarily true. There's, for a lot of operations, it comes pretty close. A big assumption is that this is only considering variable costs, not looking at overhead costs of land, taxes, labor that doesn't apply to ET program. So simply looking at variable costs between different ET scenarios. Economic output can be presented as a net present value based on life of investment, discount rate, which is basically the opportunity cost of what that money would have earned if you put it somewhere else. And that's something that each operation can determine on their own. Cash flows, and then what's your initial investment, and residual values of the inputs of the program, probably your recipients or your donors or your bulls. This puts net present value on an annual basis, so you can compare, say you want to compare a program that's going to last 10 years to a program that's going to last only 3 years. You can compare them side by side, whereas if you didn't adjust for that, that would not be possible. And then finally, return on investments, another one I use, just simply looking at total profit, net profit, but compared to total investment. And I kind of like this one for the fact that it actually gives you, shows you a better relationship between input costs and revenues versus those other economic factors, which don't necessarily show you how much input you put into that. So some of the program scenario options, and this, the list could be bigger, these are some of the big ones. Is the operation going to own donors or not? Are they going to be a contract recipient operation, sell weaned calves? Are they going to own recipients or, you know, contract out those calves? What method will you use? Will you use sex-sorted or unsorted semen? Maybe biopsy the embryos or not? And then what's your ultimate marketing goal? Are you going to sell bred recipients, sell weaned calves, developed animals, or are you going to sell those leftover embryos? So I'm going to just give a quick example of 3 scenarios that I ran. And one big disclaimer I want to make before showing you results is that this is not supposed to be a industry-wide general anecdote of this protocol is better than this one, or, you know, I'm not making any claims to that. All that these results will show is for this specific scenario, this is what the models came up with. If you change the scenario, likely the rankings could change. So in this scenario, there's 100 recipients, 5 donors for each method. The operation is going to own donors and recipients, use unsorted semen, maintain this same program for 6 calf crops, and market the resulting progeny as developed breeding stock. Natural service progeny are considered commercial feeder cattle that are sold at weaning. I built in a feeder calf slide to account for different weight and performance traits that are built within the model. 5% discount rate and 100,000. The simulations run 100,000 iterations or replications. So basically, the model was going to repeat itself 100,000 times, drawing different variables from those distributions each time it runs. So here's the results in terms of annuity equivalent net present value. So for MOET, as you can see, all these distributions are shaped fairly similar, and it makes sense logically. I think you've got a high probability of pretty marginal results, and then as results start to get really good, that probability starts to weaken. So there's some probability for negativity in all of these scenarios. Maybe not quite so much in the IVP that's not stimulated. And I think part of that is due to the fact that there's less labor, there's less input, there's less human intervention. There's less input cost that goes into it. And I'll show in the next few slides that maybe the upside isn't quite as high, but the downside isn't quite as low. So kind of a common risk-return relationship. It's probably the lower risk in this scenario, but it's also probably the lower reward. This puts it in terms of return on investment. Again, some probability for negativity. So there's a chance to lose money, but there's also opportunity to make a great return. So looking at some of the percentiles, when looking at these distributions, we can't really look at just mean and standard deviation alone because they're not normally distributed. They've got some odd shapes to them. So really it's helpful to look at percentiles. So the 5th percentile will describe a scenario where everything goes horribly wrong. Either you get 0 embryos or very few, nothing gets bred, or all the calves die. Basically, that's the nightmare scenario. And then the 95% is the dream. That's when you get 40 oocytes and 25 embryos, and every recip gets bred, and every calf survives, and you sell your calves for, they all sell for the, they're all sale toppers. More realistically, you're probably going to fall in that 25 to 75% range. And as you can see, the upside for Moet and IVP with stimulation and synchronization, you know, could be pretty lucrative, or it could be fairly detrimental, whereas there's not quite the same spread in the non-synchronized, non-stimulated IVP. Showing the same thing here with ROI, one factor that I think is really interesting to look at is the probability of negative return. Just basically showing that when considering the whole population in an untested set of donors, there's a reasonable chance that it might not go quite the way we want it economically for this scenario in question. Again, this there's a huge array of variables that can be entered into this based on costs of each operation. So, you know, this is just scenario specific. And then looking at some of the sensitivity analysis and some statistics, running a stepwise regression. So basically looking at which of those stochastic variables plays the biggest role in the outcome. So for Moet, looking at the number of embryos collected, that makes sense. The revenue distribution, that is really important. If you don't have a market for your animals, there's doesn't matter how many you produce, it's probably not going to help you much. So really knowing that there's a market and these animals can be sold, if that's the ultimate goal, is important, as well as pregnancy rates up there. And then some of the negative weights make sense too. So there, you know, there's a negative weight on pregnancy loss and abortion, so that's logical. And then adjusted R-squared, meaning how much of the variation in outcome can be described by these variables. And you can see the biggest jumps, again, come from number of embryos collected, revenue distribution, pregnancy. And this does not describe full variation or the full amount of variation. And I think a big portion of that can be associated with those binomial distributions. So like I said, you know, you can do this five times, and there's a good chance a lot of things could go right or a lot of things could go wrong, but it's probably going to approach normality or the true answer with a lot of iterations. So I think those binomial distributions probably account for some of that ambiguity that's not defined through the variation here. Looking at IVP, non-stimulated, pretty similar. Revenue distribution, number of oocytes collected, how many oocytes develop in embryos all play a pretty important role. And same thing for IVP with synchronization and stimulation. Revenue, number of oocytes, number of embryos, pregnancy. And then looking at how much of the variation can be and outcomes can be described by these variables. So some of the next steps that could be taken with this model or model similar, do some more in-depth sensitivity analysis, explore some of those optimization techniques. What's the best number of recips we could have? What's the optimum number of times we could flush or do OBU? And I think one thing that this doesn't account for is what's the genetic change? How is that going to accumulate over time? If you're running a program for 6, 10, 20, 50 years, how could that be accounted for? And I think this model could be kind of a base template for accounting for some of that or something similar. And this requires continuous updates. The embryo industry, especially regarding IVP and IVF, is changing so fast. A lot of the new advances are privatized, not really available in the literature, or maybe even kind of trade secrets that certain companies aren't going to share with other companies. So keeping up with that is a challenge. And then finally, model application. Just get out and use it and use the same methodology in different topics, different subjects, whether that be, you know, deciding what type of vaccination protocols to use, or, you know, you name it. I think this methodology could be applied in a wide array of subjects. So in conclusion, this stochastic simulation allows us to account for that biological uncertainty and look at the economic risk. And, you know, what really makes this valuable, I believe, is that we can look at different scenarios and kind of tweak things, change things. And then, like I said, the model structure was the hard part, adjusting those variables to fit what an individual or what a company might deem as more, you know, acceptable is fairly easy. The caveat, the disclaimer, is that just like any model, it's never going to be completely accurate, but it's going to give us a good idea going forward. So some acknowledgments. My committee that helped me with this was Dr. Robert Weber, Dr. Michael McNeil, Dr. Jennifer Borman, and then Dr. Heierstam, that was in the industrial manufacturing department at K-State. And then there's several individuals that kind of helped spark some ideas and conversations, including Michael Ray, Daryl Stevenson, Matt Barton does some embryo biopsy work. So several people that have kind of helped me get to this point. And with that, I'll take questions if there's time, I guess.